All right, morning. Today's daf is daf Chavtes in Masechta Nida. We are in the bottom of Chavches Amid Beis, and we're moving along. We're in the third parak of Masechta Nida. We're talking about childbirth. We're talking about Timas Leida. The last topic that we discussed was the woman gave birth to a human, but the human is gender confused. It's either a tumtum or it's an androgynous. So the Mishnah says, Teshe l'vezecha u'nekeva, so she has to treat it like a male and like a female. And with the chumras of both, as we've been discussing extensively over the past couple of days. We are in the bottom of Chavches Amid Beis, and we've been talking about zecha u'nekeva and anything that falls in between regarding other halachas as well. The Gemara used a number of drashas. We used it by Vazav Zavola Zachal Nekeva. We used it by Mitzora. We talked about it regarding Bias HaMikdash, walking into the Bias HaMikdash while being neither male or female, but being something in between, a tumtum and androgynous. And basically, what came out from the Gemara through the drashas is that when the Torah says Mizachar Ad Nekeva, as I described yesterday, what you could say, you could have argued, is that there's some sort of continuum, meaning there's male, and then there's female, and then there's a whole set of things that are somewhere in between, right? Being an androgynous, being some sort of hermaphrodite, etc., etc. That's what you could have said, but the Gemara says, no, that's not the correct pshat. The correct pshat is mizachar anekeva, means it's got to be one or the other, definitively. Either you got to be male, or you got to be female. So regarding Bias HaMikdash, oddly enough, if a person who is an androgynous, someone who's both male and female, or tumtum, simply we don't know, male or female, and they issue discharges, and the discharges are both red and white. And remember, red is the color of tumah for a woman, white is the color of tumah for a man, and this person issued both, the red and the white, so he's got all of his bases covered, right? If he's a he, he's tameh. If she's a she, she's tameh. Tameh-ah. So he got all of her bases covered, but nevertheless, we learned out through drushes, through a series of drushes, that even though this person walks into the Bais HaMikdash, and this person's Tamei, but nevertheless they didn't violate Bias HaMikdash, at least on a Karis level. Okay, I'm not suggesting there's an invitation extended to this person to walk into the Bais HaMikdash, but that's all what we saw yesterday. We have one little piece of Gemara just to finish up this whole discussion, and we're going to do so right now. We're like about five lines from the bottom of Chavches Amid Beis V'chol Heicha. So you want to tell me now that everywhere in the Torah where it says Mizachar Anekeva, it's to exclude the middle category, the Zachar and Nekeva, right? The hermaphrodite, the Tumtum. So but we did see this discussion regarding an Erech. Erech is the value of a person. We spent a Masechta talking about Erechin. And the Torah says, HaZachar V'tanya HaZachar V'lo Tumtum V'Hajagonus. So the Torah says, HaZachar, meaning, remember, in order to establish how much Erech you pay, so you base it on age and gender, and that's it. Those are the only two factors when you consider how much Erech you pay, how much is his value, the Erech value. So lo yehi berech isha v'al yehi berech isha tam lomer hazachar v'im nekevar zachar vaday nekeva vaday v'lo tumtum v'adragnas. So we darshin, this takes us back to the Gemara in Erechin. We darshin that the halacha of Erechin only applies to a definitive male or a definitive female, but nothing in between. Now, what's the Gemara's problem? It sounds pretty consistent to what we've been saying all along. So the Gemara, this is a technical issue. Tam dichsiv hazachar v'im nekeva. So it says hazachar, and then it says v'im nekeva, which means that the drasha is not based on zachar and nekeva, it's v'im nekeva. It's the extra v'im that gets us to this point. Hami zachar v'nekeva, lo memai. Had it just said zachar v'nekeva, that wouldn't be enough to exclude. And meanwhile, over the course of yesterday's daf, it was enough to exclude. So the Gemara says, mibay lelechalek bein erechish l'erechisha. So the Gemara says, The Gemara says, yes, you're correct. But over here, we had to make a pronounced distinction between man and woman. What does that mean? If you take a look at the top Rashi, on Chavtos Amid Aleph, Rashi writes, Hilkach, Ilav, Hava Amina V'im, Lo Mimai Tum Tum Ava Hacha, Midahava L'Lamichtav, Adam Tishalechu, Ksiv Zachar Nekeva, Shema Minel Adrasha. Yeah. In the case of Erechin, had it not said the word V'im, I would have thought maybe there's really no distinction between male versus female. meaning that you would have thought that the Erech would have basically have been more or less the same. But the fact that the Torah has to say Ve'im means to tell us that there are two distinct entities, and the Tumtum and Drogonus is not to be included in the two. But for all the other drashas, for Bias and Mikdash, it would be enough just simply to say Mizachar Nekeva. Okay. All right. We continue now in the Mishnah, and we're now going to be talking about the birth of breach, meaning coming our feet first, and also coming out, unfortunately, not as a viable baby. Now, what do we learn in our Mishnah? The definition of birth. It's very simple. It's the emergence of the head. In a natural birth of a regular live baby. So the definition, the very definition of birth is when the head comes out, and as we're going to learn later on over the course of today's daf, it's not even the head, it's the forehead. It might even just simply be the first view of the skull, the first moment that the head actually emerges. So that would be considered the definition of birth. Now, defining birth is extraordinarily important for so many reasons, meaning there are many halachas that impact what the very definition of birth is. Right? This year we were learning Masechta Sanhedrin in the high school, so we did the eighth perek. So one of the big issues is the issue of aborting a fetus. Now, there is the current discussion of aborting a fetus, but that's not what I'm talking about because I'm not current. In other words, that's a modern American political issue. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the halachic issue of where the fetus is posing a threat and a danger to the mother. So, at what point in time can you terminate the life of the fetus so that the mother's life will not be threatened? So the Gemara Sanhedrin, it's really a Mishnah Noelos. So the Gemara Sanhedrin says is that prior to the baby's being born, prior to the birth of the baby, so if this fetus is posing a threat to the mother, so then you can terminate the life of the fetus. If, however, once the baby is born, so then that's it. You can't terminate the life of the baby. Ein dochin nefesh mipnei nefesh. You can't sacrifice one life for another. And even though the mother's life may be in jeopardy, and the baby's jeopardizing the life of the mother, but the baby's also as much as a human being as a mother is. Okay, I understand. In utero, what is the status of the baby? That's a lengthy discussion in of itself. But in other words, it's certainly something. It's not nothing, but that's very important then to give a very precise definition of what birth is. Because the moment the baby's born, right, with the legal, with the halachic definition of birth, that's it. You can't touch the baby. So we are trying now to define what birth is. Now, Yatsa Mechutach HaMesuras. Now, the Mishnah says it comes out either cut up or Mesuras, it comes up breech. So when the baby is a viable baby, so we all agree what the definition of birth is, it's the emergence of the head. And not even that, it's even just the forehead. What if the baby either came out Mechutach, which means the baby was cut up, obviously not a live baby, or Mesuras. Mesuras means backwards. Right, we have another usage of the word misuras that comes up in the Mishnah, although it is not the same, but it's the same basic idea, and that is reading the Megillah. Right, reading the Megillah, you're not allowed to read it misuras, meaning you can't read the Megillah backwards. You got to read it from the front to the end, from beginning to end, not from the end to the beginning. So, yatsa mechutach misuras, amar Rav Elazar afilu aroshi mahen. Now, if the baby comes out cut up, meaning, God forbid, the baby did not survive its pregnancy, and not only that, but it becomes dismembered. And now the baby's coming out limb by limb. Okay. When is that baby born? Meaning, I know now it's a little bit stranger to try to define its birth, but if we're going to define it, when is the baby born? So the Mishnah says when the majority of the baby comes out. Okay, that's the, to quote the language of the Mishnah, Yatsa mechutacho mesuras mishiyetze rubo harehu kiyalud. So it's considered born when the majority of the baby comes out. Now here, what would be the point of defining when it's born, meaning it's not viable? So what practical difference does it have? So the first is our perek, which is the mother being tummy. I know it's not as exciting or it's not as dramatic as what I talked about a couple of minutes ago, but that would be the first basic nafkamina, meaning when is she on the hook now to bring the carbon and her tumas leida, and when does all that happen? So it happens at the birth of the child. So now that the child is coming out dismembered, So it's not going to be born, quote unquote, until the majority of it has come out. Yeah.
Is there a distinction made between the baby leaving, or its head leaving the cervix,
right,
the uterus in the bed, or leaving the end of the canal?
We're talking about the visibility of the head. So it's not, in other words, it's when it actually emerges. You've got to actually see it. Okay. So Amar Velazar Afila Roshi Mahan, Rav Yochanan Amar Loshan Ola Shena Roshi Mahan, Roshi Mahan, Harosh Poter, or Harehu Kiyulot. Okay. Here's the machlokus between the Amorim, between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan. We're talking about a dismembered fetus emerging from the mother. Now, the Mishnah seems to be pretty clear. The Mishnah says that you need the majority of it to come out, right? Only when it's a live entity is the head going to be significant. But once it's no longer a live entity and it's just coming out piece by piece, so therefore you need the majority to come out. That's what the Mishnah seems to be saying. And that's exactly what Rav Elazar basically says as well. Meaning, Rav Elazar is really doing nothing radical to the Mishnah. Even if the head is part of that piece that comes out, but a head, once dismembered, is no different than any other limb of that fetus. So the head will count, but as much as an arm, or as much as a leg, right? Rav Yochanan says no. Even when the baby is now dismembered, the fetus is now dismembered, the emergence of the head already gives it status of it being born. Even though, of course, from the baby's perspective, it really doesn't matter. Unfortunately, this baby no longer is alive. But nevertheless, Rav Yochanan says that that head still has status, and it will be considered a birth even when the head, dismembered, emerges from the mother's womb. Leman b'dishmol kemifilgi. Now what we could do is that we could take this machlokus between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan, Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael, and kind of align it with a statement made by Shmuel. Because Damar Shmuel ain't a rosh potter b'nefalim v'shalim. I'm sorry, ain't a rosh potter b'nefalim. Shmuel says that when it comes to a navel, when it comes to a stillbirth, so again, Rachman Letzlan, the baby came out not alive, the baby came out dead, Shmuel says, ain't a rosh potter. The emergence of the head over there is nothing. It's not significant because it's not a live baby. So it seems now that this machlokus between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan is going to be contingent on the statement of Shmuel. Meaning, and if we're going to align, we're going to have Rav Elazar agree with Shmuel that when the baby's dead, the head is meaningless. So the Gemara says, "Bishalom dekol yam lo plegi ki plegi b'mechutach." The Mar Savar, "Bishalom hu dekachashiv b'mechutach lo kachashiv." Omar Savar, "B'mechutach nami chashiv." So the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe the machlok between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan can be somewhat distanced from the statement of Shmuel. If the baby is whole, even though it's coming out dead, kulam lo pligi, there really wouldn't be a machlok between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan. Ki pligi b'mechutach. The only debate is when the baby is dismembered. Mar savar b'shalamu dekachashev b'mechutav lo kachashev, mar savar b'mechutav namichashev. Where even where it's dismembered, Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan are going to have a debate. Okay. So, fine, that is one way to say it. We're going to skip the parentheses. We're going to move on. Igi demasni ala hashmaita b'apei nafshe. Now, some people learn this machlokas Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan not as an attachment to our Mishnah, but as a separate independent machlokas. Amar Rav Elazar in Harosh Kerov Evarim. Rav Yochanan Amar Harosh Kerov Evarim. So here we have it, and we're going to basically be saying the same thing, just there. It's more fundamental. Meaning that according to Rav Elazar, the Rosh is in a Rosh Kerov Evarim. The head is not like the rest of the limbs, meaning the head is separate. Other way around. Ein harosh kerov evarim, right? The head is not like the majority of the body, meaning once the baby's dead, the head is just another limb of the body. And Rav Yochanan Amar harosh kerov evarim, and Rav Yochanan says no. Once the head emerges, even though it's a stillbirth, it's kerov evarim. The head is synonymous. It's like the majority has come out, even though the baby is not alive. And here, the way we're saying it now, This is the machlokas of Shmuel. And this is now the very same statement that Shmuel was making, where Shmuel says, again going back up in the Gemara to what we read earlier, Shmuel says, Ein harosh poter b'nefalim. A rosh is not poter, meaning the emergence of the head when the baby's not alive is not significant. It's like any other limb coming out. Okay. Tanan.
So the if you think about it,
yeah.
Until the head is emerged, until the baby comes out, you probably don't know whether it's going to be a viable or not. So it's being born first. Right. So the head comes out, you establish it's born, and then, I mean, unless it's, you know, then everything is intact.
Right.
If it's dismembered, then it's a different story. You can tell it's not going to be viable. But if the head is intact and it's coming out, you don't know until
right. I myself also is trying. I'm trying to think of some sort of svara in terms of why that the emergence of the head is so significant. It could be, again, that's my suggestion, ignore it if you will, it could be that the head is just such a large part of the of the baby's body that the head really, once the head comes out, that's like, you know, the rest of it kind of just glides out, so to say. That could be. But then it would be hard to understand the distinction whether the baby's alive versus when the baby's dead.
But the thing is that you don't establish that on top of the baby.
Right.
But this baby has no ceremonies or rites. There's no pidyon
ha-ben. I mean, no. There'd be nothing of the sort. Right. This consideration of birth is really only vis-a-vis the mother. Meaning, for the baby, from the standpoint of the baby, right, hard to imagine now what then, you know, how this would translate for the baby. So, harosh kerov evarim, I'm sorry, v'kamefik b'shmol, tanan. So, here's what we do. You know what we're going to do now. We're going to try to poke and prod and see who's correct. And we use our Mishnah. Now, what does our Mishnah say? Yatsa mechutach o misuras, mishiyatsa ruba hare keyelod. Now, midikamar misuras mechla de mechutach ketikno. Now, when you read our Mishnah carefully, our Mishnah talks about two different scenarios. One scenario of the Mishnah is yatsa mechutach. Baby comes out dismembered. O misuras, or the baby comes out breech. Now, the way the Mishnah seems to be presenting itself is that these are two totally different scenarios. Either the baby comes out dismembered, which means first the head, then the torso, and then the limbs. O misuras, or flip the baby around, the baby comes out feet first. But the second case, the baby's not dismembered. The baby's still whole and intact. But because the baby comes out breech, we're not going to define its birth until the majority of the limbs come out, because the head is the last thing to come out. Okay, so now, with this careful reading of the Mishnah, now the Gemara makes the following observation. Now, it sounds like that when the baby's coming out dismembered, it's coming out in the correct order. Meaning, I don't mean correct, I mean in the normal order. First head, then torso, then limbs. And the Mishnah says that it's not considered born until the majority of the baby comes out. Okay, so if we're reading the Mishnah this way, it sounds like between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan, which of the two is the Mishnah preferring? Which pshat is the Mishnah preferring? It seems to be preferring Rav Elazar, that the head, once no longer part of the rest of the body, it's just another limb. So Hareza Kilut, Kashal Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara makes exactly that point now. It seems to be difficult for Rav Yochanan. Amalcha Rav Yochanan Ema Yatsa Mechutach Umisurah. So Rav Yochanan says, here, let me do this. Let's try it this way. I'm going to read the Mishnah just a little bit differently. I don't know if he's actually taking out a word or he's just revocalizing the Mishnah. But Yatsa Mechutach Umisurah. Right? That Vav could be one of two things. It could either be or. That's if you pronounce it O, right? Or it could be U, which is and. So what I'm going to do, says Rav Yochanan, is I'm going to, instead of vocalizing it as an O, I'll change it to an U.
Our Mishnah does say O.
Yeah, so our Mishnah has it as a separate word. And that's that, right? That's going to be an issue because that can only be read as an O, not as an U. So maybe he is changing the gears of the Mishnah, or remember, it's Torah for them, it's Torah Shabbat Peh, so... You didn't have to write it out as an O.
That could be where the Vav here has the
Right. Correct. So yatsa mechutach umetzras vaha o ketani achi kamer yatsa mechutach o shalem v'zev v'zev mesuras. Now the Gemara can't get past it. The Gemara can't get past the fact that our Mishnah says the word O, and apparently the Gemara had it as a Masura that's there. That word O is there. So if it's there, so we don't have the option of changing it to an U and changing the Mishnah of Mechutach U Misuras. Rather, it's Mechutach O Misuras. So the Gemara, what does the Gemara do? Achri Kamar Yatsa Mechutach O Shalem V'ze V'ze Misuras. So, we're just going to reinterpret the Mishnah. We're going to get to the same point, just we're going to have to keep the word O in there. It comes out either dismembered, or it comes out whole, either way comes out breach, in each of these cases. Mishiyatza Rubar is a Kielod. Either way, when is it going to be considered born? Only when the majority comes out. But, if the baby, even though it's dead, comes out head first, the emergence of the head is considered its birth. Again, this is all Rav Yochanan's reading of the Mishnah, obviously to defend his position, that the emergence of the head is always going to be significant, whether the baby is alive or dead. Amar Rav Papa Kitanai, Rav Papa says that this machlok between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan ostensibly is a machlokus amongst Tanayim. Yatsa mechutach o mesuras mishiyatza rubar is a kilod. Rav Yossi Amar, mishiyatza kitikno. Now, it's hard to understand what Rav Yossi is saying. It has to come out correctly, meaning in the normal sequence. Now, my kamar, Gemara just asks very simple, point blank. What's Rav Yossi even saying? Amar Papa Achi Kamar. So the Gemara offers this pshat. It's going to be a difficult pshat, but the Gemara offers this pshat. Yatsa mechutach misuras mishiyatsa ruba harei ke yolod. Haki tikno harosh poter. If it comes out, mechutach umisuras, both dismembered and breech. So when the majority of it, if it comes out, it is considered born. But if it comes out, not breech, but if it comes out, the head comes out, harosh poter. The head is considered birth. That's fine. Okay, in other words, that in of itself good is good. And now, what is Rav Yossi saying? Rav Yossi Amar Mishiyatza Rubo, Kitikno. Mishiyatza Rubo, Kitikno. When it comes out, the majority of it, that is only when it comes out head first. But if I were to invert, if the baby comes out breech, and then it's feet first, so when is it going to be considered born? Not even when the majority comes out. I need all the baby to come out in order for it to be considered born. So maskefla Rav Zvid, mechlal demi mesuras rubo nami lo poter. So Rav Zvid says, did you hear what I just said? Meaning, did you just hear what we suggested within Rav Yossi? That if it's coming out inverted, and if it's coming out feet first, so it's not going to be considered born until all of it comes out. All of it? We've never suggested you need all the baby to come out. Hakaimalan deruba kukulo. We have a general rule that throughout all of Shas, which is that once you have the majority, that's like you have everything. Rubo kukulo. Right, we said that by shechita, when you shecht an animal, so I have to cut through the circumference of the trachea and the esophagus. Do I have to cut all the trachea? No, I only have to cut the majority of it. Do I have to cut all the esophagus? No, I only have to cut the majority of it. Rubo kukulo, here also. When the baby's emerging, even though it's not a live baby, but when the baby's emerging out of the mother, and the head's not coming out first, and it's only the feet first, but still, once the majority of the baby has emerged from the mother, that's considered birth. And there is no arguing that point. And not even Rabbi Yossi, who is a Das Yachid over here, we're not even going to entertain the idea that he's arguing on this principle. So Alam Rav Zvid Achi Kamer, so the Gemara now is going to give another pshat. Yatsa mechutach umisaras, if the baby comes out dismembered and breech, mishiyatza rubar is a kilo, haki tikna rosh poter. But if the baby comes out head first, the head itself is considered born. And Rav Yossi Amar, mishiyatza kitikno lechayim. And Rav Yossi says, that's true only if the baby's alive. But once the baby's dead, so then the head is like only, the head of the baby is like any other limb of the baby, and therefore it's not going to be considered born until the majority of the baby comes out. Okay? And so basically what we've done now, in this interpretation of the Braisa, it now works out that the Tanakam and Rav Yossi are arguing over the very same issue as Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar. Again, the issue is very simple. When the baby's alive, we don't have any disagreement. We're all in agreement that the emergence of the head is considered birth. When the baby's dead, now we're going to disagree. It's a machlok chin Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan. It turns out to be also machlok chin Tanakam and Rav Yossi. If the baby's dead, does the head lose its special status? So Rav Yossi says yes. The Tanakam says no. Same machlok chin Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan. Rav Elazar says that the head does lose its status. Rav Yochanan says the head does not lose its status. Okay. Tanya Namehachi, the Gemara quotes this in a brace as well. Yatza mechutach. Now here we have the word O in parentheses. Yatza mechutach umisteras mishiyatza ruba areze kilud. Hakitik na rosh poter. If the baby comes out head first, even though the baby's not alive, if the head comes out first, that's considered born. Rav Yossi Yomer mishiyatza kitikno lechayim. Rav Yossi says that's only when the baby's alive. Veze kitikno lechayim mishiyatza rav rosho. When the majority of the head comes out, the baby's considered born, but only when the baby's alive. The Ezuhu Rov Rosho. Now, oh, by the way, we don't even need the full head to come out. We only need the majority of the head to come out. What does that mean when we say the majority of the head? Rav Yossi Amar Mishiyatza Tzid Av. When the head emerges up to the point of the temples. Abba Chanan Mishim Rav Yoshua Amar Mishiyatza Padachto. When you see the forehead. V'yesh Amar Mishiyaru Karnei Rosh. When you see the Keren HaRosh. I know. Right, Rashi, Gova Rosho She'etzel Ha'oref. The point of the head. Baby's head is soft and malleable. So, in other words, when it's basically the crown of the head coming out, that's considered birth. Okay. All right.
Is the baby of the
Is it considered Peter Rechem? Right. Right. That's a good question. Right. Is the birth of a stillborn considered Peter Rechem? Yes. I think the answer is yes.
Not
Reish Yisona. Right. For sure not Bechor for Nachla. But Bechor for, in other words, Bechor vis-a-vis Peter Rechem. Yeah. Okay. All right, that takes us through the topic of coming out breech, coming out stillbirth. Okay. Yeah, so between Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar, my assumption is that we're going to go like Rav Yochanan. That's my assumption. Yeah. That even though the baby came out stillbirth, the baby came out dead, once the head has emerged, the baby's considered born. Okay.
In both cases,
both when the baby's alive and when the baby's dead. And again, when the baby's dead, to what halacha does it speak to? It speaks to when the mother becomes a tuma, tamei leiv. Okay, we're now finishing up the third parak of Nida. We have really more to go, meaning obviously we have the rest of today's daf, and then we have daf lamed and daf lamed aleph. Okay, so what do you want to say today? Is today's Tuesday? Yeah, all day? Yeah, it's Kitov. Okay. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we have, almost till the end of the week, we get to finish the third parak of Masechta Nida. Okay, we begin now a thoroughly enjoyable sugya. It's one of the most complex sugyas in, but I'll tell you the truth, though. In other words, we're going to get a run of this sugya a couple times in our Masechta. It's really not that bad. It seems tougher than it is. The chart behind me, which I drew up before the daf, it's going to give a good picture. But before we start there, however, we have a little bit of Mishnah, a little bit of Gemara to do. Hamapelas vein yodea mahu. She miscarried. She doesn't know what happened. Meaning, she knows she miscarried.
Right. She doesn't know
gender. She right after that. She really has little more information to go than that. She certainly doesn't know what the gender was. So the Mishnah says, Teshev Lezachol Nekeva. Okay, so as far as she's concerned, well, let's say she gave birth. Well, what's the gender? Obviously, we don't know. We have no evidence of where the fetus is. So treat it like a male and a female with the chumras of both. Ein yadua im vlad haya v'imlav. Let's say she miscarried very early in the term of her pregnancy. So the reality is, we're not even sure she was pregnant. Okay, but in other words, we know that she had some sort of discharge really early on. So now, Teshev Lezachar, Ula Nekeva, Ula Nida. Now, there really are three distinct possibilities over here. Could be she gave birth to a boy. Could be she gave birth to a girl. Could be this isn't a birth at all. Could be that this is just simply her having a blood discharge. And Rashi writes over here, Teshel Ezechel and Kevel Nida, Klamar, Kishatira Tehe Nida, She'en La Yemei Tawar, Deshem Alav Ladu. Over here, she won't be able to enjoy even the Yemei Tawar. Meaning, in the case of a birth of a baby, she gets the benefit of, I mean, we're just speaking specifically from her perspective, she gets the benefit of the Dam Tawar, which if it's a boy, it's 33 days. If it's a girl, it's 66 days. If we don't know, so it's going to be, we're going to obviously be Machmir, and in other words, she'll just do 33 days, and as we've discussed already a number of times, it really won't be 33 days because she'll have to count 2 weeks of Tama, of Dam Tame, because it may have been a girl, so it's only going to be 26 days. Anyway, however you want to discuss it, she will get some Dam Tahor, but over here, however, where she discharged it and she's not even sure if it was a baby, so as Rashi explains, she doesn't get the Dam Tahor. Deshem Alav Ladu, Rashi writes, we don't even know if this is a baby. Uvigmar Fresh Lama Huskar Zachar Hol Ve'en La Dam Tahor, Dimishim Tumas Leida, Katan Nekeva. The Gemara later on is going to ask a very simple question, meaning, you want to tell me that we're going to be Machmir, that's fine. So all you need to do is just basically say, either it's a birth, or it's not a birth. Meaning, why do we have to say, let's consider the possibility that maybe she gave birth to a boy? What does that add to this particular case over here? Meaning, if it was a boy, she'll be tummy for 7 days. If she's a Nida, anyway she'll be tummy for 7 days. So, come on, later on we'll ask that question, but that's later on, that's not today, that'll be tomorrow. I'm Rav Shua ben Levi. Avrav Narvi pila mivia karba v'nechal. Halachacha rov nashim v'rov nashim v'lad me'alya yaladan. So we have a statement, a memra of Rav Yeshua ben Levi, and it goes like this. She is about to have she feels something coming out of her body. So she squats over a river. She discharges, right? And the river carries that away. Okay. And okay, obviously it's tragic and obviously it's very emotional. Right now, just from a halachic standpoint, so Rav Yehoshua ben Levi says she'll treat it like she had a baby. After, now again, we don't know gender, so you're going to have to wait till 80 days. After 80 days, she'll bring her karban, and not only will she bring her karban, the kohanim will be able to eat the karban. Meaning, she brings a chatas and an ola, and the kohanim eat the chatas. Now, a kohen can only eat a chatas, meaning the bringing of the karban in of itself will satisfy her suffik. But the idea that the kohen is eating a karban, that's a definitive statement that she had a baby. But we don't know. Rav Yehoshua ben Levi says, yeah, but let's work with Rov. Meaning, majority of the time, a woman's pregnant and she has birth, what has emerged from her is a baby, is a fetus. So therefore, on a Rov standpoint, the Kohanim get to eat a karban. So, Tanan. Okay, so the Gemara says, Let's poke at this statement of Yehoshua ben Levi, and let's poke at it using our Mishnah. Tanan. Ein yaduin vlad hayat teshu v'zachar nekevel nida. So, let's take a look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says she miscarried early in her pregnancy. So, could have been a boy, could have been a girl, could have been neither. Could be that she's just a nida. So the question is obvious. If our Mishnah says that one of the possibilities is that she's a nida, that means that could be that it wasn't a baby at all. How can Rav Yehoshua ben Levi say that this woman, who miscarried over a river, and the river swept away the baby, she'll bring a karban, the kohen will eat the karban, I don't understand. It could be that it wasn't a baby at all, as our Mishnah, in fact, entertains that possibility. Probably, intuitively, everyone already figured out the answer. The answer basically goes like this. When it comes to the Mishnah, our Mishnah is talking about where she miscarried so early in her pregnancy, she wasn't even sure she was pregnant. It's what the Mishnah refers to as lo huchzika upra. Right? She wasn't showing. Meaning, she was in her first trimester. And again, back in the good old days, You don't even know you're in your first trimester. I mean, yeah, they're good indications. She stopped menstruating. But in other words, she wasn't even sure she was pregnant. But once she's sure she's pregnant, meaning after the first trimester, and after she already sees that she's pregnant and she miscarries, even though we don't have physical evidence of what she miscarried, we're going to assume it was a baby. Obviously not viable. Obviously it didn't survive. But we're going to assume it's a baby. She'll bring a carbon. The Kohen will eat the carbon. We'll say it definitively. Okay. Tashma. The Gemara, again, challenges Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. An animal. Now, I know we're leaving the world of humans, and now we're entering into the world of animal, but the Gemara right now is assuming it's the same. An animal is pregnant. The animal goes away. The animal comes back. The animal's no longer pregnant. Where's the fetus? It obviously delivered on its own. Okay. Now, the next baby that comes out of this animal is a Bechor Misafik. We don't know what emerged out of that baby, out of that animal the first time. So therefore, we're going to treat this next birth as a possible Bechor.
What would it have had to been that was born in order for that to be a Bechor?
Anything. Wait. In order for which one? One or two?
The second.
In order for the second one to be a Bechor, meaning that's arguing that the first thing that it had was nothing.
Was nothing. Just some kind of, like we said.
Some sort of amniotic sac filled with whatever. In other words, it wasn't a baby.
But the next one won't be a
Bechor. Okay, good. So that's exactly what the Gemara now wants to challenge. Meaning, if Rav Yehoshua ben Levi is correct, right, we have a rov. Meaning, most of the time when a person's pregnant, they're going to have a baby. Okay, right. So, v'amai. Okay, good. That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara says, I don't understand. If Rav Yehoshua ben Levi is correct, so then this animal that went away had a baby. Do we know that definitively? No. Probably? Yeah. Meaning, more likely than not, it had a baby. The animal had a baby. So now when it comes back and it has another baby, this is probably baby number two. And again, for our discussion, probably, meaning rov, is enough to say that this animal is a pashut. It's not the firstborn. Ravina says, I'll tell you what, in of itself it would have been a good question, but you're comparing animals to humans, and they're not the same. You're right, I'm with you on the majority. Most of the time when the animal's pregnant, and the animal gives birth to this, whatever this is, most of the time it's a fetus which will exempt the next one from the Kedushas Bechor. V'chola yoldos mitanfos. However, when it comes to animals, before they give birth, so they secrete. Now, what do they secrete? So, I don't know. Rashi tries to describe it. Rashi says, yom echad kodem leida ke'in glaira. Some sort of lecha, some sort of secretion. Okay, I don't know what it is. Now, it could be. Now, it happens to be the last time I visited the farm. So we were learning Bechoros, right? You remember? I coordinated my trip to the farm with Bechoros. So I was able to ask Dr. Berman a whole slew of questions. Now, however, I need another I need another trip to the farm because I need to find out what mom is secreting prior to the birth. Okay, but anyway. Vizuhol velotinfa Israel Ruba. Ah, so over here, it happens to be that there's a usual secretion coming out prior to birth. In this particular case, there was no secretion. So even though there is a majority, most of the time when an animal gives birth, it gives birth to a fetus. And the animal went away for its birth. So we don't know, but we can work with majority. But it happens to me in this particular case, we did not find any secretion. So he called Yoldos Matanfa, Tamidol Matanfa, Bechor Ma'alyahu. So the Gemara says, can't we? So here you're telling me that in this particular case, there was no secretion. Isn't that an indication that this is not a baby? Whatever it had the first go around? Ela'ema Rov Yoldos Matanfa, Vizuhol Velo Matanfa, Israel Ruba. So the Gemara says, okay, let's modify. I don't mean every expecting mother, mother over here meaning animal mother. Every expecting animal is going to secrete. The majority of them do secrete. So over here, being that this particular animal didn't secrete, so therefore we're going to at least make an argument, a good argument, that what came out was not a baby. Okay. But right now we are in defense of Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. So again now, We stand by the statement of Yeshua ben Levi, that when a woman is pregnant, and for that matter an animal as well, but let's leave an animal out of the discussion, because an animal has got its own set of rules. But when a woman is pregnant and she miscarried, we're going to assume, based on majority, based on Rove, that what it miscarried was a baby. And so that means to say that she's Tamei Leida. Okay. And the only thing that the only reason why our Mishnah seems to argue with Rav Yeshua ben Levi is because our Mishnah is talking about a very early miscarriage prior to her recognizing that she was in fact pregnant. Okay.
Since there's some doubt here as to exactly whether he's right or not, why don't we go back to that argument that we had in terms of Rav Chiya, who said that, you know, to his children, said that why you're trying to be machmir, but you're actually being male, because, you know, when you give her the two later. And if it's not, then for all those that you're going counting Torah, she could be tummy.
And more than that, the Kohanim are eating a carbon
right.
Based on this Rove.
So because
Rove is strong. Rove is a very strong principle. I mean, I don't need to go any further than this Gemara to show you how strong Rove is. We don't know, but the majority says that she had a baby. And that's a very, very strong principle that operates throughout all of Shas. Ki asa Rav and Amar. Mesiv Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina Toa. Okay. Over these two lines of Gemara, we will be spending the rest of today, a good part of tomorrow, really going over a difficult sugya. But again, don't get overly nervous. It's not too difficult. Ravin comes in from Eretz Yisrael because that's what Ravin does. He's our frequent flyer. And Amar, Mesiv Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina Toa, Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina challenges the rule of Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. He challenges them using the brisa of Toa, and quite honestly, I don't think it's that big a challenge. Okay. And can we stop over here? No. We have to actually go through the challenge and explain why he doesn't even think it's much of a challenge. Mahi de Tanya. So the first thing we're going to do is, let's introduce ourselves to this brisa. Isha Shiyatza Maleo Vare Kanis. The case of the Braisa is, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, it's an absurd case. But through its absurdity, we're going to be able to learn so much. Meaning, I think by design, if I may say, I think by design, the Braisa chose an outlandish case simply for the purposes of us being able to learn so many principles. Okay? There's... You'll see. I don't need to elaborate anymore. She goes away. She's pregnant. She comes back. She's no longer pregnant. Okay. She had the baby. She has no clue. And the truth of the matter is, when did she actually give birth? Unclear. Okay. She came back. Here's a little information that we have. We know she was pregnant. When she comes back, we know she's no longer pregnant. When did she have the baby? We don't know.
Memory loss.
We don't know.
Cannot talk or communicate.
And she can't talk. She can't communicate. Maybe the pregnancy, maybe the delivery was so traumatic, maybe it affected her memory. Okay, good. So we have little to work with in terms of information. Now, Hevil lefanenu shlosha shavuin tahorin. Now you can look behind me. Every column. Am I saying it right? No. Every row. Thank you. Every row represents a week. Now, you'll notice behind me on the board, I have 13 weeks represented. Shaded weeks is weeks that she bled. Okay? The unshaded weeks, the unshaded rows are the weeks where she did not bleed. So that means, that's correct, as you're looking behind me, that means that she did not bleed for, now this is all upon after she returned. Again, we have no history of before she came back. Meaning, only when she came back, does she start to have now some awareness?
And there was some kind of, so she was pregnant.
She delivered the baby. No idea when, and now she returns.
Wait, don't we have the baby, or we don't have the baby?
No, we don't even have the baby. No.
How far along was she?
We don't know.
That's the baby.
Okay. Now, when she comes back, so she gives us. She then demonstrates 3 weeks of no bleeding. Okay, so that's rows 1, 2, and 3. Okay. Now, the next 10 weeks, we're going to then go through a cycle of bleed, no bleed. bleed, no bleed. And we're going to alternate now for the next 10 weeks.
And she bleeds for the entire week when she bleeds?
Yeah, let's say.
Okay.
Okay, I'm with you. Again, the Bryce's case is outlandish, but again, we're going to learn so much through this outlandish case. Okay, now, there are two distinct issues that we're going to talk about over the case of this Bryce. Number one, how often can she have relations with her husband? When can she have relations with her husband over the course of these 13 weeks? Two is, how about her toveling in the mikvah? Now, these are two distinct issues. Today, for the remainder of today, we're only going to talk about her having relations with her husband. Tomorrow we'll talk about the mikvah. But in the meantime, however...
Are you following Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi?
This is all going to be as a question against Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Our purpose right now in reading this brisa is to attack Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi.
Okay, but the question is...
I haven't articulated the question. So... Stay with me. So, she can have relations with her husband on the eve of the 35th day. Now, on my grand design behind me, I only broke it up by weeks. So, we're gonna have to do just a little bit of math on the eve of the 35th day. So that's the fifth week, okay? And that is specifically the end of the fifth week, okay? And Beis Shammai says she'll dunk in the mikvah over the course of these 13 weeks 95 times. Okay, tomorrow we'll talk about the tefillos. Just stay with me right now. Now Beis Hillel, not so much, just 35 times she tells us in the mikvah, not 95 times. And Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda says one tefillah in the mikvah will be sufficient.
Okay.
Now, there's so much of this brisa that right now we don't understand, which is fine. We have tomorrow, God willing. Right now, we're just interested in one facet. Now, Bishlama Shavur, Rishon Lamashamesh, we're just right now talking about the intimacy between husband and wife. Now, the first week I get. Because Ema Yolad Zachar, he. Because, look, for that first week, it could very well be that immediately before she returned, she gave birth to a boy. Okay? So for that first week, she's Tamei Leida, and specifically having had given birth to a boy. Shavur Sheni Ema Yolad Nekeva, he. Now, for the second week, we could also make the argument that right before she came back, she gave birth to a girl. So I understand that during the second week, she can't have relations with her husband. And Shavur Shlishi, Ema Yoles Nekeva Bezovi. And for that third week, I also get that as well. Because as a halacha that we've gone over already once before, and let's quickly review right now, it could be that immediately prior to her birth, she was a Zava Gadola. Meaning that she was in her 11 days of Yemei Ziva right before her birth, and she bled for 3 consecutive days during her Yemei Ziva. Then there was an abeyance of any bleeding whatsoever. Or there was no pain while she was bleeding. And then she gave birth. So not only, and let's argue over here that she gave birth to a girl. So not only is she tummy for 2 weeks for having given birth to a girl, but on top of that, she also needs her Shiv and Akiyam. She needs her 7 clean days. And she can't count her 7 clean days. This is an important point.
Okay.
She cannot count them concurrently while she's experiencing her Yemei Tumah. So that means that only after her second week of her having given birth to the girl, only then can she count her Shiv Nekiyam, and it happens to be that in this case, that third week she had no bleeding whatsoever, so fine. Ela Shavua Revi, Alpha Gav de Kachazia, Dam Tishamesh, Dam Tarahu. So Lamishim de Lozina Basaruba. So the Gemara says, but here's what I don't understand. Now let's take a look at that fourth week. Now, I know she's bleeding during that fourth week. In fact, I shaded the area. But let her have relations with her husband that entire fourth week because she had a baby, right? And the Gemara now is assuming, and this is a major assumption, the Gemara now is assuming that she had the baby immediately prior to her return. So whatever she had a boy, she had a girl, who cares? I'm not trying to be flippant. But she had a boy, she had a girl, either way. The bottom line is that she had a baby, and she already sat her Yemei Tumah, And she accounted for the fact that it might be a girl. And she even accounted for the fact that it might be in the cave of Bezov. So now for that fourth week, she's in Dam Tahor. And it really doesn't even matter whether it was a boy or whether it was a girl. Even if it was a boy, that only affords the 33 days of Yemei Tohar, she's in it. She's in those 33 days. So let her have relations with her husband during that entire fourth week. So the Gemara says, and this is an attack on Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Because Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, what do you say? Most of the time when a woman gives birth, she gives birth to a baby. So that's Rov. And that Rov is so powerful that we're not going to say that she probably had a baby. Based on Rov, we're going to say she had a baby. So if she had a baby, so why can't she have relations with her husband during the span of the entire fourth week? This is the Gemara's Kasha. To which the answer is very simple. Elamai lav yelo yadana mai tiyufta emai chika leidasa. And I simply say to Ravin, who brought in this brisa, what are you talking about? You assume that she had the baby right here, right before she came back. How do you know? Maybe she had the baby over here, over here, over here. And so maybe by the time that you got to the fourth week, she's no longer in her Yemei Tohar. So in other words, you walked into this question making the assumption the baby came over here.
So it could have been a male. Just a couple of weeks before.
Right. In other words,
but the thing is that you don't know how long it is.
Again, this brisa, that's the fundamental mistake. He thought that the brisa was dealing where she had the baby right before she came back, and that's not correct. That's absolutely not correct. And by the way, you'll see it tomorrow, over the course of tomorrow's daf, you'll see even the thought that the baby was born over here is so impossible. Based on all the information that we're going to gather tomorrow. Okay, so I keep that up on the board tomorrow. Maybe for tomorrow, I'll break up the day so you get to see each day in of itself. And tomorrow, we get to discuss more of this. Tomorrow, we're going to cover the tefillahs as well. Okay? And over the course of the second half of tomorrow's daf, and Lamed Aleph, some of the more popular and interesting Gemaras regarding the birth of a baby.